You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-hosts, Vanana.
Hello.
And Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 130 of the Fanboy Garage. Another week, another episode. Once again, we are happy to have you guys with us. Yikes, WandaVision, what the F is going on with that show? And Zack Snyder releases, I don't, how many... 15 posters. Great. No, it's like three or four.
Three. They're right behind. So,
yeah, but we get a date
for those of you.
Yeah, we get a date for his cut of Justice League. And there's some other rebooting shows that are going to be happening. And we'll be talking about. Maybe we'll talk about Young Rock. Did you guys see that trailer?
I did.
Yeah. All right. So we'll talk about that. Mm. Did you, Banana? You caught that?
No.
Oh,
I didn't.
Oh. Okay. Well, we'll get there.
Oh wait. Yes.
Young Rock. Yes.
But that was like a couple weeks ago.
No, he just dropped a new one. Like,
oh, time. I didn't see the new one. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Got it.
Anyways, WandaVision. Boom. Where do we start?
WandaVision episode 4. This was... This show has a very weird narrative structure because this episode basically just threw up all of the things that we've been like trying to figure out, right? It just essentially gave you like...
Well, did it?
Well, I mean, it gave you... A lot of, you know, you found out who the person was that was watching her, right, on that TV. You mm-hmm. found out mm-hmm. why they're watching her on a TV, right? You found out Monica Rambeau mm-hmm. and that whole story. And we found out that Westview, we got a general concept of what it is what the issue is.
It's what their theory was.
Right, the town that is, you know, taken over. And that we learned that a lot of the people in the show... are real people, right?
Yeah.
That are trapped there or in some cases, right? And in some cases, not totally. Probably. You found out who the voice was that was speaking to her, which again, we kind of figured that's who it was, but we got our confirmation. You saw a lot of the, you know, what led to some of the stuff that we have seen up until this point. It doesn't give us ultimate answers. Obviously, it's only the fourth episode of a 9-episode series. So we still have a lot of learning to do. But it did bring us up to speed very rapidly. And it's interesting. I've never really seen a show like this where you don't get like little bits of these things as the like in each episode where you just kind of get three episodes where little things are teased and you get little glimpses of things, but then like you have an entire episode that is set outside of like this was there was no sitcom other than the little things you saw, like which we, you know, them watching on the TV, stuff that we had already seen before in some cases, and some new stuff too, additions. There wasn't a lot of that. This was an all taking place in reality or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Just a very unusual episode to a very unusual show in the context of where they're going. And we saw the return of Kat Dennings, Darcy. Mm-hmm. Some of that was cool. This was a fun episode of this show, no doubt. Now that we have this and we kind of know about Monica Rambeau, we know about some of these things and what's happening and all of that. Like, do we now start to split these episodes? Are you going to get like bits and pieces of the sitcom? Because we know that they're going to do the 80s, the 90s, and the 2000s too, right?
Right.
So are we going to be getting bits and pieces of sitcom with this stuff now? Or are we going to go back and forth? Or are there going to be like a couple more episodes?
I think it's going to be like them watching the show, right? So it's like it may do one of those things where it shows us like we're in the show and then it pulls out and
that's what
people
I mean.
Are
yeah.
watching them
within
like
the same episode.
The show,
yeah.
You know?
This was the episode that rewarded you for yes. your patience, right? Because we've had three episodes before this, we followed so closely, and you got these little bits and pieces, but you were always left wanting a lot more at the end of each episode. And I think it was brilliant for them to then just give us like a full episode of like relief, you know, and know that the audience like needed that to yeah. continue with the story. And it was just so satisfying. And like, let's talk about that beginning.
Yo,
when she comes back,
she materializes.
Oh no. My God. I was like, I screamed at the TV. I was like, I effing love this show.
I like pause it and I'm like, holy shit, they're doing this. Like, I can't even, here's a funny thing. Like, we've seen it before. So, but they played it for laughs. So like in Spider-Man Far From Home, they talk about the blip and like the marching band is out there and then all of a sudden players right. kind of pop up and, you know, they bump into each other, but they just kind of like pop up, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? They just rematerialize like that. But this whole like the ashes thing coming back, and at first I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, wait a second, where are we again? Like I had to reorient myself with the show. And then when she comes out the hospital and everybody's popping back, I'm like, oh, wow, we are doing it for real, you know? And then just utter panic. And it was a different, you know, because we see it happen in Endgame. Yeah. And it's just like, you know, people's, you know, they hear the birds and then people's phones start ringing and Hawkeye's wife calls them and all of that stuff. But it didn't carry any weight. It was like, oh yay, everyone's back, that's so cool. But we have to remember 5 years has passed, a lot of things have changed, and all yeah. of a sudden people are popping up in a hospital and people have no idea what's happening.
Right. I loved the way it was shot, and I love the perspective of it too, because we've seen, you know, either people dissolving, I guess, right?
Yeah.
In the initial, it's like It was all these quiet moments. I'm going to try and explain. It was all these like kind of like individual, like heartfelt, like quiet moments. Right. Mm-hmm. And then now we just get a whole different perspective of them coming back, but it's in a chaotic, like hospital setting. And yeah. I just loved the camera angles going through as people are bumping into each other. You have someone being rolled away in like the gurney thing mm-hmm. as his hand is like forming again. And I just thought the composition of that scene was really well done.
Yeah. Like she runs past rooms and like a body materializes next to a bed and someone pops up looking like, what, who are you?
Yes. Are
you
yes. here?
You know, that whole, that scene was just,
it was choreographed
it was really, really exciting to see that. You know, obviously Monica wakes up, well, comes to and finds out that her mother had passed away after fighting cancer twice, so she loses the second round. And then, you know, we're thrust into it. At that point, when they thrust us into S.W.O.R.D. and she's reconnecting with that, for a hot second, I felt like I was in an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A quick second, because I was like, this guy's like deputy, whatever, director. I'm like, I don't know, you're not making me give, I'm like, I'm not feeling too good about this part. And then when they like jump her in and she meets Jimmy Woo,
mm-hmm.
That's where the show just again just hits overdrive. And because the moment you see him and he takes out his business card and he produces it with sleight of hand, I'm like, that's an Ant-Man reference. I loved it. Yep. I caught it because he learned it from Scott Lang. Love that part. Just yeah. like all the little Easter eggs that are sprinkled throughout the show, but in this episode in particular, Darcy was an intern. They call her Miss, and she's like, it's Doctor. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So they kind of catch us up where
right.
she's been doing. There's a lot of love, and there's a lot of good stuff that's being poured into the show. I'm glad that they gave people a chance, Vanessa, you said it, to kind of like, you've paid your dues in the first three episodes. Now we're gonna give you like the real MCU stuff that you're kind of craving for.
Yeah.
Because that's what was happening with Jess. Like, so my wife was watching the show, and she's like, ugh. Like, this is cool, but like, I'm not really understanding. And then she watches this episode. She's like, wow, that's super intriguing now. Now I'm like, holy shit. what is going on here? Like, I'm so invested in this show now.
You got the payoff. It's like they took you on a ride and said, strap in, we got you, and you don't know where you're going or what you're doing. But by the time you get to the end of the fourth episode and you finish, I would say, like, the first arc, like the first ride, you know, you're like, wow. Yeah. That was awesome. I want to ride that again.
They did some interesting things. So, Chris, you talked a little bit about how this was – they kind of just threw it all at us. They answered some questions, you know, Westview,
right.
Monica.
Yeah.
Obviously, we knew that.
There, obviously, and, right, and the accident, all of that and stuff. Why it seemed like she was, you know, this outsider, you know, that didn't have a home.
Voice on
and
the radio.
The voice on the radio. Even just the, again, who's watching over them and making the list and all of that stuff. And even, like, the list itself was kind of cool that she was writing out. Like, all these little questions that, like, things like we would be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Jimmy's over here, like, you know, why Hexagon?
Yeah.
Hey, we've been asking that question, right?
Yeah.
Like, is Vision alive? Yeah, right. We're still wondering that too, you know? So there's still a lot of questions there. And then this episode not only answered questions, but then opened up a whole bunch of other questions. Like, spoiler alert, when Wanda looks over at Vision and it's the dead Vision with the Soul Stone ripped out of his head, is she reanimating his life? Like, his body?
Yeah,
I don't know. That's a little weird. Right. A little necrophilia going on, if that's what's happening. Because that's a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And, I mean, we saw her, you know, do the repairs to the house after she sends Geraldine/Monica through the house and out of the world, universe, whatever. Yeah. So we got to see that. And
is she the villain?
And she says, Monica says, it's all Wanda.
I think that's a sleight of hand.
Right?
I think it's a sleight of hand. I don't think it is. And I'm going to tell you why. So I've watched that episode. I just finished watching episode two, like watching it over again. Wanda looks shocked at the use of her powers in that sense. Like, because at first she's not looking at her hands, she goes into like mama mode. Right. And she starts protecting her babies. And then her hands start going and the glowing and all that shit. And then she shoots Monica out of her universe, out of her reality. And then she looks at her hands and looks like shocked that this happened.
That's a good observation.
So watch that again. Cause there's it seems like she's like, she didn't realize that she did that.
But does her putting, like, fixing the hole in the wall negate that, though? Because she's clearly aware of her powers at that point.
She is now, but rewatch that for a second.
So you're thinking that was like the moment that...
Here's the other thing. What if she's also not in control? What if she is the instrument that is being used to create this? And so in the moment where Geraldine becomes Monica, snaps out, mentions Ultron, she snaps Wanda out. Wanda goes into mama mode. And then somebody else is telling her, you need to fix this. Whoever is controlling her, she fixes the thing and then snaps it back into her role.
It's possible.
Of housewife and like protector of this reality.
I mean, there's a really good article in the Hollywood Reporter right now where they go through a lot of this stuff. And the idea is how they are wondering whether this show is setting up Mephisto as the new big bad for this phase of Marvel, of the MCU, which a lot of us have speculated on, right? It would certainly make sense, and how they feel like this show is going to lead to the next Spider-Man film, where they think it's going to be taken to the next level, and they think it's all going to culminate with Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Yeah. And... where we know Scarlet Witch is going to play a big role in that movie. And obviously multiverse is right in the title of the movie. And we know Doctor Strange is going to play a role right in the next Spider-Man film and all of that stuff. So that makes sense. But they get into connecting with like how the number six is so important to this show, the hexagon, the use of, and how they find all these little uses of the number six. And obviously they believe that ties into Mephisto, who's essentially like the devil, right? Mm-hmm. And they... theorize, or the person, I sorry, I forget who wrote it, but the person that wrote the article theorizes that they think that this could be a situation, like you said, where Mephisto is kind of used the guise of granting her like a wish of giving her like the perfect life. And since she was kind of reared on like sitcoms, you know, in her home country, like that was her memory of what the perfect life would be like. That's why we're here. But ultimately there's a price to pay for that. And we'll see what the price is for that. And maybe through Agnes, who many people believe is Agatha, which is the witch that is connected to Mephisto. That's how all of this is going to be brought together and all that stuff. And it's really cool stuff. And they even mentioned, like, we don't want to get too lost, as in the show, you know, in starting to like, put all these things together, because and which is something I mentioned in a couple of episodes ago about, like, a show like this where you want to try not to get too deep into some of these things because you don't want to set yourself up for disappointment. But I do think that it's I do think that's a direction that we're probably headed in. So all of that would make sense, that she's not fully in control. Well, she's not in the type of control that we think she's in.
Yeah. And I mean, she says it all, like, I've got it all under control. Right. Like, she says it's the Vision, and then Vision, like, has this worried look on his face. Matter of fact, throughout the rest of that episode, so when she walks away, you see his wheels turning, and he looks, and then he puts the smile on his face and goes down. And then when he sits down next to her on the couch, he looks scared. Like, he looks scared, and then it's like, okay, yep, the show's on, the show's back on. You know, and so there's, oh my God, like the subtleties and the nuances throughout the show.
So good.
It's, they're great.
And also the idea of, like, someone is, when they say someone's censoring this or editing it or something like that, whatever they say. Like, well, that's not, we assume that that was her kind of turning back time, but it's probably not. It doesn't seem like it the way they depicted it here. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I don't think that they would have like thrown that out there if it wasn't supposed to stay in our head.
So she also looks surprised when it happens.
So
the thing with the dot, like when Dottie cuts her hand, they also show it in this episode where she's kind of looking like, and Dottie's like, you know what they say about a housewife and her stains, like, you gotta, you know, you gotta get down on your hands and knees and do it yourself. And like, Wanda's looking at her like, what is happening here? You know what I mean? But then she goes right back into the role. And like all of those moments, even when, you know, I know we were saying that it's her kind of like reversing time, and she may be, but in some of these instances, when now that we're watching it, as you mentioned, and as Darcy's watching it, we're missing gaps of all
exactly
of that.
Like, and that's what changes the perspective. So like when we saw the beekeeper seat,
that's right,
from the perspective of being inside the sitcom, it appeared that she goes no and then rewinds back or whatever term. But watching it from Darcy's perspective, she says no and then like
things just
cut,
right?
So like
we don't know what happened to that guy.
Something is doing that. Like, I mean, it's, and that's where this show, like, why is this a television show? How is it, why is it a broadcast signal, right? That can be picked up on old school tube television sets, you know, like stuff like that. Like, and what is somebody manipulating this further? Because we don't see her at any point, even in the sitcom universe, when she says no in that scene, we don't see her do anything to rewind things back, right? She just says no, and boom, things go backwards. So that's what starts to make you think that maybe somebody else is overlooking this and is manipulating this further. So, well, I guess we'll see. I mean, we have you have three episodes of sitcom, what I'll say sitcom left, because we have the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. So whether they decide to do, are we going to get like three episodes that are set mostly in the sitcom universe of those decades, and then give us a couple of episodes maybe at the end that are kind of tie everything up and bring it all together? Or like you said, do they give you kind of a back and forth you know, I would like to think that we'll get a little bit more back and forth now, mm-hmm. because I don't want to.
Yeah,
it'd be hard to suspend disbelief now. Yeah, exactly.
Quick, let's get to the answers. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let's start to unpack this sucker because there's still lots to answer.
Yeah. Really. So. Plus, after a while, like the it's fun to see the sitcom, like the little tropes and all the little cute things, but like. Like, I don't, you know, after a while, it's like we need to get a little bit more.
Yeah. And I mean, it's becoming painfully obvious that the facade is cracking.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, the vision of the dead vision is a form of that. Right. Yeah. His consistent questioning of this world is a representative of that. Right. That whole thing cracking and her thinking that she's got it under control. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I went back and rewatched like every trailer just so I could grasp any sort of scenes that where I'm like, oh, so at some point, like the world turns red, you know, like that whole the TV world turns red. At some point they are launching into battle. They are like fighting. Vision is in his old, you know, in his old outfit. He interacts with people who are frozen in time. You know, including Agatha, or Agnes. I'm sorry, her name is Agatha in the comics. There's a lot more that's left.
There's a lot more coming.
Yeah.
Oh, so, and I left out one piece to that too. That was in the Variety the Hollywood Reporter article, which is that, you know, connecting to, they say they're thinking too, like this and the Loki show.
Yeah, I mentioned that last episode because
tie into, and then they think Spider-Man and then Doctor Strange, like that's kind of the progression of as far as this cosmic stuff that's going
on. So and I'll reiterate it, but in the Loki trailer, there's a scene where Loki looks like he's in a church and he's standing next to a little girl, but behind her on stained glass is a red figure who looks like Mephisto sitting on a throne.
Mm-hmm. Right, you said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and it all makes sense. I mean, look, Mephisto's tied into Silver Surfer. Mephisto's tied into Fantastic Four, which we know now. I mean, there's going to be a Fantastic Four movie directed by the same guy who's directed the three Spider-Man movies.
Right.
So,
and then you got Sam Raimi directing.
Right.
You know, Doctor Strange.
Correct. So, a lot of this stuff is now tying together now as Marvel starts to have more of their characters, more of the universe under their umbrella, to where these little things now that maybe a few years ago, either one, wouldn't have been possible, or two, wouldn't have connected in a way that you would think they would, they can now. Yeah. You know?
Oh my God, can you imagine her smack, like just cracking open the universe and like the Fox X-Men? Yeah. Come out.
And she's like, listen,
Quicksilver comes out and she's like, wait a second, you're not my brother.
Yeah, that might be a little extreme, but yeah.
I'd lose my mind. I'd be like, this isn't happening. You just erase it. I don't want it anymore. Yeah. We're done. Gosh, Dark Phoenix is so bad.
I didn't see that.
No, you didn't see it? Thank the Lord.
Although
so bad.
Yeah,
is a way to reintroduce the X-Men without having to worry about touching that.
Yeah, universe, I mean,
you know, and how you can have Deadpool dropped into 100%. The MCU, you know.
Yeah. There's a couple of other interesting Easter eggs that I'll just drop on you guys real quick. So, one thing is about the Vision himself and his super speed. He doesn't actually have super speed mm-hmm. in the movies or in the comics, and so they're saying that this Vision in her reality is an amalgamation of Vision and Quicksilver and her brother.
That makes sense.
Makes complete sense.
How about that Easter egg?
Right? I didn't think it. Yeah.
Yes. There was another one. Damn it, I forgot it. It'll come back to me later.
And you know, the thing is, and I think because of the fact that Age of Ultron is almost like a forgotten movie. Which is weird to say, considering it made
underrated.
Fact that it made a lot of money and it was the follow up to what was at the time like the biggest thing ever, it does get forgotten about though, now because it was in at the time it was kind of more of like a standalone story, right? Whereas like Avengers, the first one was like the culmination of this phase, right? And whereas Infinity War and Endgame were the culmination to that entire 10-year saga. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ultra, Age of Ultron was just like, it was there. It was the second Avengers movie, right? And it didn't, but so it's easy to forget, especially because we haven't seen a Scarlet Witch solo film, that, you know, her brother died.
Yeah.
And like, we haven't really lived, we haven't really seen her like really deal with that much, right? Mm-hmm. And through this now, having that name drop, you know, last episode, not, well, in episode three, and now you with that Easter egg mentioning that, and then how, you know, the brother is playing a role in her head in this show, and that's, at least it's bringing that back now into consciousness. So, so it's nice how they're able to, throughout this giant universe that they've created, kind of bring some things back, work through some things, you know, as they go along with these characters and all of that.
The and the other Easter egg just popped back into my head. You guys ready for it?
Yep.
Okay. So when Monica, in the beginning, what, 2 minutes of the show when she's coming back, they're playing audio from Captain Marvel. And it's a conversation that she's had with Captain Marvel when they're sitting on the steps. So that audio is playing. And while she's coming back from wherever she was. So another little nugget for you.
Yeah.
There's so much more.
That happened so quickly.
Yeah.
That audio in the beginning that I didn't catch.
And it's hazy. It's really fuzzy.
Yeah. It wasn't meant for you to really hear it, but it just
No, I was going to say the attention to detail. And this is the thing
you took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah.
That I appreciate about this show, and it is a reminder to me about the Marvel way. I'm not going to say formula because that has a very negative connotation, but the way that they construct their universe, they put so much attention to bringing those little moments in that connect it to something else, right? Like it's a web of connectivity, and you have to remember – they want you to remember that that character is coming from somewhere else, that that's a character you've met before, right? Again, Jimmy Choo's little, like, I say Jimmy Choo, but isn't that a shoe company?
Yeah, it is.
Is that his name? Jimmy Choo?
No, Jimmy Woo.
Jimmy Woo, sorry. Anyways, when he does a little car trick. Ant-Man. Uh-huh. I mean, like, there's so many, many little beats.
You know, it's see all that. Listen, so I mean, say in Captain Marvel, Monica Rambeau is a little girl, right? Mm-hmm. And her mom is Maria, is the kind of the adult Rambeau in that movie, right? So, but you know that when they made that movie, that they realized that adult Monica Rambeau was going to play a role at some point, probably in WandaVision, and then we know she's going to be in Captain Marvel too. So like they have these things planned out. That's why at this point, I don't want to say it was always like this, because we know that the MCU didn't start out exactly like this, right? There were certain things that kind of just were coincidence and happened by accident. But at this point, because they're looking so long term, most things don't just happen.
No, by coincidence.
Right. They didn't just throw in a little girl in the movie named Monica, whose mom happens to be named Maria Rambeau, just because, like, oh, Monica Rambeau, yeah, she's a character in the comics.
Yeah.
No, like, and this stuff is all going to connect eventually, and and that's pretty sweet that that happens. Yeah.
I got to say, it's a little distracting when they keep on saying Rambo. I'm like, stop saying that name. Just call her Monica. It's like,
you only have room for one Rambo in your life.
There can be only one.
It's, you know, it's smart, and they don't waste any space, which I think audiences like us, like, we really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And it's fun hearing about these Easter eggs, you know, that you're mentioning, Aaron, because if you don't know, it doesn't ruin your time. No, you know, no. It doesn't ruin your story. But when you do find out about these things and you put them together, it's exciting. It's like having fun outside of actually watching the show, and you relive it all over again.
It's like I said, there's a lot of love that's being poured into that show. There's a lot of attention that most people are going to, you might overlook it, right? You know, for real, like I said before.
Yeah.
It's a quick and you miss it scene where, like, you know, Vision is fading through the floor and you see the executioner's helmet in the floorboards. Like, things that happen so fast, but they're seeding it. Yes, that person exists. He's in, like, you know what I mean? Like, the moment you include something like that, you are leaving the opportunity open to say that villain exists in this world. Maybe we get to him, maybe we don't, but we didn't do that by accident.
You know, I have to say the other part of how this episode made me feel is I have been waiting all year for kind of like a feeling of these are my superheroes again, you know? Yeah. I remember in the beginning of the pandemic, I had to go and rewatch, Infinity War and Endgame, especially the scene where they all come together, you know, and like that portal opens up and all the heroes like walk through because I needed to experience that positivity and like that electricity of like, yes, we're going to win. Right. Yeah. Like the people, the good guys are winning and the people I'm rooting for are going to make the world okay again. And as silly as that sounds, it might sound a little bit childish, but I think that's like we all can relate to that and we all feel like that. And we haven't had that. Like, I thought Wonder Woman was going to be that moment. Right. No, it wasn't. Epic disappointment. Yeah. Didn't make me feel a thing. However, this last episode, we didn't even really see anything spectacular per se, right? But just her walking into like the SWORD headquarters, and you know there's people on top of things trying to solve this like mystery, and you know where it's going and where it's leading. I just felt so taken care of.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if I'm using the right words, but I got that feeling again, like that happy feeling, like, oh, I can't wait to see my heroes. I can't wait to see where this is going. I can't wait to see what's going to be next, how they're going to tie this to the other movies and how they're going to set up, you know, this next phase four. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
I'm 100% with you. You know, the last superhero movie I saw in theaters was in February, which was Birds of Prey, if you want to call that a same superhero here. Film.
Yeah.
Right. And I 100% agree with you. There is a certain, and it's not a Marvel DC thing. Like it really isn't that. It is, again, that storytelling. We're already invested in those, this universe. Like, I don't even say these characters, like, we're invested in the universe.
Right.
And it felt like there was a hole missing now because Marvel had been so quiet. They hadn't done anything. We hadn't seen them since Endgame, which was great because now you really, like, you miss it. I watched Wonder Woman 84 and I'm like, oh my God. I thought I was going to have this uplifting moment and I'm just like, it's a snore fest. And then WandaVision comes along and I'm getting the vibes that I get from like The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm with you. I'm in the same boat. Like, I remember I rewatched Black Panther and like had a visceral emotional reaction. I didn't have that the first time I saw the movie in the theaters. Like, I thought it was deep and I thought there were some moments I was like, holy cow. But like the loss of Chadwick Boseman, what he meant for the community, what that character means for a whole bunch of people. The you know, just the energy that comes off of the ownership that comes off of him in that role, and the fact that we're not going to see him again.
I know.
And, you know, all but like, it's also the love and the creation of Wakanda and what it stood for and what it stands for and what it means to everybody. Like, that stuff felt really good. And it's funny because, like, I'm watching it with my 1-year-old and he's like locked in on it. I'm like, This is awesome. This is legacy. This is good stuff, man. Like, you're growing up like the way I grew up watching Star Wars. But it's gonna be Marvel heroes.
That's cute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm very much looking forward to the rest of what the MCU has to offer. I wish, I really wish in my heart of hearts that we got this from every studio that was creating superheroes.
Hell yeah.
Cause it's not, it's not an apples to apples comparison. And I get that people don't want to follow. They want to make their own stuff, but like bring the humanity in it.
Right. I was just going to say, it's more than making something that's cool and yeah. with like good fight scenes and good CGI, you know, it's the humanity. It's those stories that we relate to that, you know, it's our escapism, right? Like throughout all last year, I wish for something that I can escape into. And Marvel has created this universe that's been so visceral to all of us and also had that connected thread throughout. So it's easy to hang on, you know, compared to some other studios where the threads are a little bit disjointed, but they got whatever their formula is, whatever they do, they got it down packed. Like we are on that string, we're on that conveyor belt, you know, and we were missing that. This whole entire year that they were quiet, it was just, it was like, ugh, it was like a void in your heart, like a hole. Yeah. And finally, this last episode, I got the tingles and I just got super excited again.
Yeah.
And it's just so cool.
It's funny. I get where you're both coming from on this, but, and while I'm enjoying this show, I'm not getting any of that. Like, no. I'm enjoying it for different reasons. Like, I'm not, there's nothing superhero about this show at all. Like, to me. But, like, I'm enjoying it as really quirky, cool television for now. I think it eventually will morph into something else and lead to something bigger. But I think that I am ready for superheroes again. Mandalorian helped, not that that's superheroes, but like, again, I was disappointed with Wonder Woman 84, just like you guys were. But when I was not super pumped for this phase of Marvel. You know, like, I'm just like, all right, you know, it's going to be, we'll see what happens. Like, Spider-Man, like, cool.
You guys still got it.
Shang-Chi, all right, you know. Okay, let's see what you're coming. But yeah, Eternals does nothing for me, at least as a concept. You know, we'll see. Yeah. Again, Guardians of the Galaxy did nothing for me as a concept, and I you know, loved it. But yeah, like, I'm enjoying it just as like quirky, fun, like television. Like, it's just like on that simplest level. And I think that I feel like Falcon and Winter Soldier, for me,
yes,
assuming it's good, but will probably make me feel a little bit more like Vanana, like what you're feeling right now for this show, because I think that's going to be a little bit more like on that, in the superhero realm. But one of my favorite parts of this last episode was the initial interaction with Jimmy and Monica, like when they're talking to the cops. And they're like, oh, like that. I could have watched like a whole show of that.
Yeah.
Like stuff like that, that was like really cool. So like this show is working for me, like on that level. Like it's fun, quirky, like television. I've heard people say Twin Peaks. I wouldn't go that far, you know, but it's got like the Lost thing and it's got like, you know, that Twin Peaks-y kind of wackiness. Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's just, it's cool. It's very different from anything that Marvel has done. And it also, for the people who are hung up on this whole, like, Marvel is cookie cutter, right? It's like assembly line filmmaking that, like, doesn't let creators create, and it's all one vision and all that stuff. Like, here's another example of where they've done something different than anything we've seen in comic book television movie storytelling, right? At least in this medium. And like, it's like they don't, it's almost like they don't get credit for some of those things. Just like I feel like they don't get credit for, like, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies being different, right? The Winter Soldier being very different from anything that we had seen at that point. Black Panther, in a way, being different, right? Black Panther just doesn't necessarily feel because of the, you know, just different music, different tones, different themes, stuff like that. That was clearly a creator-driven film.
Right.
Thor Ragnarok doesn't look or feel like the previous two Thor movies, right, at all, on any level. And now you have a show like, and even Spider-Man. Now, Spider-Man, you know, you could say that I don't think the direction of those movies was necessarily super inspired, right? But it did some great things with Spider-Man, and now you're seeing this, which is different. And I'm sure the Loki show will be different.
Oh yeah,
right.
Oh,
from anything that we've seen, and it seems like, you know, stuff like, so now we're starting to see like there is variety here. You know, this isn't like a one trick pony, and that's what's the most enjoyable part to me. Whereas like I'm watching this show that Marvel Studios produced. It's in the MCU, but it doesn't feel, except for when you get those brief moments, which we have not gotten a lot of, like we got in this past episode where Scarlet Witch is doing Scarlet Witch things. You don't really even realize it. Like Vision, until he turns into like Vision, you forget.
But right? Even still, like Paul Bettany is a master. Yeah,
absolutely.
He's so good.
It's like you're just a purple dude. Like, cool.
Yeah. I'll also say that I think what Marvel did and the high note that it left everyone, you know, with Infinity War and Endgame, there's a trust in them as the audience member. So you know they can take you on a different ride. And now I trust them, right? Like I'm there. I'm on for the ride because they left us on such a high note. I mean, like that movie got a standing ovation in the theater in that particular scene, right? When all the heroes showed, like everyone was like cheering their fucking heads off. Sorry. You know? So you leave and you trust them. You trust that I don't know what's happening. I don't know where this is going. I don't know what the Eternals movie is going to be about. I don't know where Shang-Chi's going, you know, whatever, right? Yeah. But you're like, okay, I trust you. You already left me on such a high note before. You've done it once. You can do it again. Like, where are we going to go for our second date, right? Yeah. Like, you're going out with this guy, you know? She showed me a great time the first time. Okay, whatever. If he wants to plan it, I'm gonna go with him wherever he wants to go the second day or what, you know. So, I that's the excitement that I'm feeling is like I'm on for the ride. Like, what are the surprises that are coming? Because most likely, I don't think they're gonna be disappointing.
Yeah.
See, I'm the pessimist.
I'm an optimist.
Yeah, they leave you on a high note, but like that high note means lots of expectations.
Yes.
And for me, you know, watching Black Widow, the trailer for Black Widow, after coming off of Endgame, I was like, okay, maybe it's good. I didn't really think she needed a solo movie, but okay, fine. If that's what we're going to do. When it comes to this Disney Plus stuff, I had a huge question mark about WandaVision. Huge question mark. Like, I don't know if I'm really, are these two characters I really, like, care about? The biggest question mark was like, how is he a thing?
Right.
You know, since he's dead. And once we get to episode one of this show, you're either on it or you're not. Right. And if you stuck with it, I'm glad. I hope that this episode helped you kind of reconcile what was happening in those first three episodes. I said this in a text conversation that Chris and I had with our listener, Thabo, and he was like, oh, you know, the show could have started on episode two because episode one is basically pointless. And I so disagree. And sorry, Thabo, I have a show. You don't. So I'm going to tell you why I disagree. But my dude, the wife, that is what she, now we have confirmed she is a real human being.
Right.
She watches her husband choke and cannot do anything about it but just go, stop it, and repeat herself. But her eyes are scared. She fears for the life of her husband who is choking. Dude, if that doesn't say anything about a first episode, and like now we all know all of those people are just going through the motions of whatever script they're in and on, like that is wild. And the fact that, and I said it from the beginning, the fact that Marvel has the balls to drop a show like this and give you a legit sitcom with a little bit of mystery, that's craziness to me.
Yeah. I just thought of something else, sorry, random, that Vision does really quickly, which is like type up all of those like receipts at work.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're like, since you've joined, our productivity has been up 300%.
Yeah.
Or 1300%.
Right. And that was in the first episode.
Yeah. No, there's, look, I had mentioned in that thing, I was like, look, I was not blown away by the first episode. I liked it more upon my second viewing after I had rewatched the first few episodes again, but it's the first episode.
Yeah.
And that's my thing. It's like there are many shows where you could probably take out the first episode and yeah, it's just like, I guess we've become so used to this instant gratification where we feel like a first episode. So he called it a pilot. It's not a pilot. Right.
No.
The pilot is an episode of a show that is used to essentially sell a show. So you've got to reveal a lot in a pilot. A pilot needs to essentially establish the entire premise of the show, and it needs to give you an arc throughout the episode, and it needs to end in a way that
it doesn't go anywhere.
It has an ending, but it also sets up the future. Right.
It sets up everything. It is not a pilot.
This first episode is not a pilot. They didn't need a pilot. So it was just the first episode of 9 episodes of one big story. Mm-hmm. So I think that we do oftentimes want that instant gratification when we see things. And this first episode certainly didn't give you that. And I do get the point where, you know, maybe people might have, you know, tuned out or whatever if they weren't. But I think most of the people watching kind of, they knew enough to give it at least another episode,
sure,
because you did get enough little mystery and you got enough of an idea that like, well, this isn't all this show is going to be, right? It's not just going to be this weird sitcom within a sitcom, you know, with a show within a show rather. So I think that, so I think in that sense, while yes, it was not the most amazing first episode of television that I've ever seen, I say to this day, and you know, again, I keep mentioning this show just because of where this show takes me. But like, one of the best first episodes of television I've ever seen that wasn't a sitcom was that first episode of Lost. It's amazing television. The show, even in its great moments and its great episodes, never reached that peak again to me creatively, and ended on a complete whimper. Right. So
because this is why I've never seen an episode.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, you also want to be careful with the first episode where you can't. I like to pace myself with stuff like this. I don't need things thrown at me, you know, in a million different directions. I want to be able to go for the ride and follow the story. That doesn't mean I don't want the story to be good. Yeah. Right. And it doesn't mean that I don't want any episode to ever go anywhere. But yeah, I'm okay with this first episode being what it was. You know, just considering where we're going with it.
Yeah, and you know, and we can kind of wrap or close this conversation.
Yeah,
it's going to go on the entire episode. Kevin Feige was commented this past week and saying something like, "Fans, stick with it. There is a payoff.
Yeah.
There's going to be some good stuff." And I've seen stuff on Twitter where people, like, I guess there was some stuff that was leaked about the next 2 episodes, and they're like, there's some bangers that are going to happen. So, hey, if you're listening to us and you're still like, on the fence about it, stay tuned. If it's not your cup of tea, then bail out.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
It's all good. You know, there's other things to watch, or maybe there isn't. But hey, it is what it is.
Yeah. So
you'll have 4 hours to watch of Justice League.
You will, and we can talk a little bit about that.
I'm so not excited for this.
So
I already have Justice League fatigue.
So as you can see, for those of you watching us on the YouTube, you can see behind me the three posters that they released.
That's probably the more striking one, the one that's like right behind your
head. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah. It's just always the way it works out. I actually kind of like this one where with the reels, which is kind of creative.
That's pretentious.
It's fun though. March 18th is the debut of Zack Snyder's Justice League on HBO Max. That is, I believe, the day before the Falcon and the Winter Soldier debuts.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're Disney expecting Plus. You to probably like pause the movie midway. And then...
sure. So it's not going to matter to me anyway, because I'm pretty sure March 18th is a Thursday, and there's no way I'm coming home and watching that on March 18th.
Gotta get home super early.
Guarantee you that much, and probably won't watch it because of the length until Saturday would be my guess. Maybe Friday. There's an outside shot. But yeah, I mean, so it's happening. It's 4 hours. You know, I don't know. I mean, look, it is what it is at this point. I there's really not much else you could say other than we just have to wait and see what the final product is. You know, I mean, it's, he did do a lot of reshoots. They spent $70 million on them. We know it's involved stuff with Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck, right? And we know Ray Fisher and Joe Manganiello and Jared Leto, you know, were involved in those reshoots. We know that Jason Momoa and Gal Gadot were not. Ezra Miller also involved in those reshoots. So obviously it's interesting that Aquaman, Wonder Woman not involved in those. They're going to just be going on footage that had already been shot. Now, it just could be that maybe a lot of their stuff or the stuff he was planning on using was already shot already at that point. Makes sense. You know, especially when you consider the Superman arc in that movie.
Yeah.
And the fact that how much of Superman's role had to be was reshot in the Joss Whedon version because of the whole thing with the lip. With the mustache thing.
What thing with the lip and mustache? What are you talking about?
Yeah. So, I'm at the point with this where...
I couldn't tell.
I'm kind of ready for this. Yeah, exactly. I'm ready, especially when it's the first thing you see, basically, in that movie. I'm kind of ready for this. Not so much 4 hours of it, but I'm ready to see this just because of the fact that... look, Joss Whedon's version is hot garbage, right? In every way. The music sucks. The narrative sucks. The reshoots, clearly people weren't invested in those, right? It's uninspired. It's a movie that I never rewatch, despite the fact that Batman is my favorite superhero ever. I rewatch... you know, things that I liked even, you know, I'll rewatch almost anything with Batman in it, but I haven't rewatched Justice League. So I won't mind if this is this really cool, big epic story that can fit with Man of Steel and BVS and be one thing. And, that's fine. But I'm not setting any expectations. I have not really been on social media much. So I have not, or at least not on Twitter much. So I have not had to deal with what I'm assuming is just a lot of back and forth about this. I know today, I think it was today, as we record this, Zack Snyder tweeted out a picture of Cyborg with a quote from Martian Manhunter. So that's got a lot of people talking. There's obviously going to be a lot of characters in this movie. Because, you know, which is, you know, can be concerning, but it is 4 hours. So, you know, reading the synopsis, it looks like they are going to get into a lot of the backstory of some of these characters and things like that. And as we get on, and, you know, again, none of that is problematic from a narrative perspective. I'm not even going to get into going back and saying how they could have accomplished the same thing over the course of multiple films and gotten to that point. We all get that. But yeah, I mean, I'm ready for it. I'm going to try to watch it in one sitting.
You're already tired, like, talking about it. Like,
yeah, well, it's not even...
The four-hour
thing stinks. And it just... it stinks for a few reasons. Just because, like, mentally... like, you know, I have to now figure out a time to watch this. You know, so now it's like a chore. because like I can't just like throw it on when I have a couple of free hours, like on a Friday night or a Tuesday night, or, you know, I have to be able to dedicate time to it. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I would have preferred to have it be broken up a little bit. Yep. If it was going to be this long, I think that would have been a good idea. It didn't even need to necessarily be like a mini series. Didn't need to be four, but we could have gotten like a part one and a part two, you know, maybe 2 hours each, you know, spread out over the course of a weekend so that you could digest a little bit of this slow. I mean, yeah, could I stop it 2 hours in? And of course, but I don't really know. It's not really how I want to watch a movie that is clearly one long movie. Unless it's set up in a way that allows for that. Like if it allows for breaks and stuff like that, where it's got sections.
Yeah, it's
and
called
things.
The pause button.
Well, I get that. But I'm saying, like, you know, you pause it. Like, I wonder if it's cut in a way where, since it was at one point, they were thinking about doing it as a miniseries. I wonder if it's still cut in a way where, like, it has sections.
Only if you buy the Justice League VHS. It comes in two parts.
The four, yeah, the four.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, boy. Yeah. My concern about the runtime is that... Do I hear geese? It's so weird. My house? I don't know. There's like ill snowstorm happening over here and like geese.
I'm going to take the dog out after this.
That is... let me tell you, the one thing I never thought I'd hear on this show.
Yeah,
do I hear geese?
Wow.
Oh,
wow. The thing that concerns me about the runtime is that if at any point in the early part of that film where it starts to lag,
yeah,
and you hit that, you know, you hit that point where you're like, oh, geez, can we just, like, is it even worth it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is the point where I'm like, ugh. You know, if you hit that point in a movie, because, like, if you hit it in a two-hour movie, it makes the movie feel super long. Can you imagine how long it's going to feel if you hit like a part of that film where it's like, well, this is all filler. Why are we sitting in this part of the film? Like, can we just get to the next part? That's
I feel like it's me, again, not having not seen it, not knowing what the narrative is, not knowing how it flows. Like, obviously the theatrical Justice League was too short, right? It was just hacked to pieces. Yeah, and it was just like, what the hell was that?
Right.
This is the complete opposite of that. So it's like we went from one extreme to the other. But yeah, I mean, I just think, yeah, it's just unfortunate. I think it makes it difficult. It makes it difficult to focus. Like, you know, I don't want to have to like be on my phone or doing other things or whatever. Like, I really want to kind of be able to dig into it. I feel like there's going to be a lot to it. And I'm also curious to see if this is, if it is going to lead to other things, whatever that may be, you know, again, like that's that question. Like, I know that they said it's, you know, it's going to be its own separate universe. And this is like a cul-de-sac, this exists on a cul-de-sac and all of that stuff. But like, you know, I don't know. I feel like $70 million is a lot to invest in reshoots for a film that, you know, it's not going to have any, that's it. It's just like a one and done, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I guess that kind of, you could do that, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think the pictures that he tweeted earlier today, they also look like really terrible quality. With like the hashtag on it, it's like he did it really quickly on his phone himself.
I didn't even see these. Like, it's on Twitter.
Yeah, this is on Zack Snyder's Twitter. Like the font and the color and I don't even know, because usually when directors will tweet an image, right? There's like a whole team that approves it, or they tell him, hey, Zach, can you tweet this out, you know, in like promotion or whatever. This looked like something that he just had like an app on his phone, did the text himself, but
dropped the thing on top of
it. But the image quality does not look good at all. Like, Like, what is the one with Wonder Woman and it like looks the screen. Theater?
It's a, it looks like. It's exactly it's what it is. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's his. It's probably his screener.
It's not his screening room. That's like a template that you get in one of these like apps yeah, where you plug yeah, yeah. in where you plug in pictures. I mean, it could be. Look,
he's very active on social media and stuff like that. It wouldn't surprise me if he just threw something out. He's like, oh,
I'm going to drop it into the theater. Yeah,
just for this. Because he is pushing for a, or he was supposedly pushing for it to get a limited theatrical run.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
I expect it's
grainy as hell. And it's,
yeah, that's definitely the photo not
is angled or the filter is angled. It kind of like warps the Wonder Woman thing.
That's not his screening room. There's people sitting in those seats. That's like a, that's like a, on? I don't know.
No, it's clearly a,
it's a template.
Yeah. It's a template.
It's a template. It's like, I have apps like that where I can plug my face in on a billboard, you know?
Shit,
I don't know. I just feel like it's a little amateur coming from him and, you know, the anticipation for his cut, right?
The funny thing is, too, the picture of Cyborg is one that was in the original trailer.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It was old, like, he zooms up because he goes through, like, a couple of different forms as he...
I mean, these are just his I just look at it as this is him playing to his social media audience, which is big, and just kind of teasing this and having some fun with it. And yeah, these things that are behind me, those were the official, you know.
Yes, that's yes, your, yes.
That's your stuff that was there for that. This other stuff is really, you know, that's for his audience and his people. And
it's kind of, you know, it's kind of interesting to me because a lot of the imagery that he's using this round is of destruction, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's of like the sort of fall of Justice League or whatever. And that wasn't always the case. Like when it was originally marketed, it was like Unite the Seven. It was like, you know, these badasses get together to fight evil, blah, blah, blah. And this is, it's very different. So it makes me wonder if the direction, the overarching direction of this movie has shifted, even from the original version that he was working.
Yeah, I don't think it did because he didn't. I think the reshoots that he did could not have been that like extensive to that point to completely shift the entire narrative of the film because like there were people that weren't even involved in them. You know, that then, so I think some of this stuff here could just be homages to maybe
like
the theatrical version, you know, like, hey, we're,
oh, I see what
you know what I mean? It could just be some of this stuff's critics. I mean, look, there's a poster the trailer, here with, though, with film reels that,
yeah, but the trailer starts with like a, you're moving past destruction and you're,
well, yeah,
the Omega.
Sure.
World.
I mean, obviously, that's a big part of all of this, right? And that was the whole.
Yeah.
You know, we assume that if had his vision been fully seen through, that it, you know, the whole point would be to be saving the world, right, from destruction, right, from Darkseid and all of that, and from, you know, so I just think that look, these are his tones. I still think the movie at the end of the day is going to be about that. It's going to be about uniting the Justice League to save. But I think you are going to get a little bit more of like, you know, these characters and seeing why some of them are broken and seeing how that may lead to them coming together.
Right.
And kind of, you know,
the deconstruction.
The whole deconstruction of it. And then, you know, the whole idea of like them coming and uniting to face a greater good. You know, I think we've seen similar themes that you saw that was kind of a theme in BVS.
Yep.
And I think it's going to play an even bigger role clearly in this. So yeah, it's something that it's just one of his themes. It's a theme that that Zack Snyder has used for his vision of what he was thinking this universe would be about, right? Mm-hmm. It's the broken heroes who have to find themselves and find the commonality and the common good to fight these greater evils.
Yeah.
Cheers
to Martha.
Yes. Yes. Did you see the there's a meme going around with Godzilla and Kong?
I did.
The one where it's like, save Mothra, and he's like, why did you say that name? Yeah.
No, I didn't see it.
You know your film is going down in infamy for that.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I don't have a good feeling about this whole thing.
But
can't wait for it to like come
and go.
And go. Yeah. Yeah, basically. Basically, there is fatigue, you know. It's not a new film. No. It's not a brand new idea, right? It's not a new release.
I look at it as a new film.
Yeah, so anyway. I mean, so do I.
Yeah.
I know.
My feeling on it is all of this energy spent for a decent filmmaker.
Yeah.
In my mind, had this whole thing not have happened,
yeah,
would Zack Snyder be going down as like a Francis Ford Coppola? Would he be going down as like, you know,
no.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, to me, he's made a couple of good films, decent films. Like he's stylized films.
Yeah.
But like, so have the Wachowskis. And they messed up too in a couple of cases.
Yeah, they
couple
have.
Instances.
Yeah.
Right.
But I think it's just that they never had a film taken
so
away from them in a sense. Mm-hmm. They never had a film
taken.
Yeah, no, 100%. So that's the thing. I mean, look, Zack Snyder, you know, he's made some good movies. You know, Dawn of the Dead, Watchmen, yeah, no, I mean, he's made, 300.
5 point, exactly.
Yeah, 300.
300, that's it.
Well, but he hasn't made that many. And even that Owls movie was pretty cool. I mean, Sucker Punch I've never seen. I have not heard great things about it. But like,
no.
And then Man of Steel, which I like, right? Yeah. And so BVS really, to me, was his big failure. But
Watchmen's a divisive film. It's a good film. I like it for what it is.
Exactly. Watchmen is divisive, I think, only because for the same reason that... I don't think Watchmen is divisive because of Zack Snyder and his vision. I think Watchmen is divisive because there is a segment of that population that just never wanted Watchmen to be a movie. And there was almost no way you were going to be able to do it and please them, right? Because if you actually look at it, I mean, Watchmen is as faithful to the comic as it could be. Yes, he changed the ending, and rightfully so at that time, right? For the purposes of that movie. It's still fairly faithful. It's as good as you could do it, and it is stylized and all that stuff, and that's fine. But like, I really believe that like a lot of that backlash is mainly just because people just didn't want it to be made. And for whatever reason, this guy does elicit some of that. Like people just don't like him for whatever reason. You know, as a filmmaker, not as a human being.
Yeah.
Some people don't like him as a person. That I haven't figured out why. I don't get it. But like, you know, he as a filmmaker, because he is stylized. So, you know, we don't know though what, you know, but to me, his output has been more good than bad as a director. And he's done some things that were cool. I mean, what he did in Dawn of the Dead, where you take an unnecessary remake of a classic film, was great because he did the running zombies and all that stuff, which wound up kind of becoming a thing for a while, right? It was like a revolutionary thing at the time.
Strike that. Hold on. Danny Boyle's 28 Days Later.
Well, but they're not really, it's really not as much of a zombie film though, right? That's more of a virus film. Depends on how you look at some of those things, right? There's debate over that.
Really, bro?
Right?
What?
Yeah.
Not a zombie film? What?
I mean, it is, but it's a little different. It's a little different in the sense that you can explain away why that would be, they would be running as opposed to like
no
rabid.
Gonna be...
You know, like it's almost like a rabid animal versus a dead body. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was cool though. And then 300 was cool. right?
That was cool.
The way he shot it, right? The way he did it. So, like, there's things that, you know, he's done. And so sometimes stylized can work. Sometimes it doesn't necessarily. But, I mean, I get it. I still don't fully understand. And I know the story. I think, you know, like what the family stuff that he dealt with plays a role in this as well. But I didn't at the time fully understand why it became such a big thing. But, you know, sometimes things resonate and you know, he found a social media audience. And we've seen how that happens.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot. So, yeah. But anyway, it's coming out, and I'm sure there are people who've already decided that they're not going to like it, and I'm sure there are people that have already decided that they'll love it regardless of what happens.
Right, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how that all shakes out.
I have no interest in seeing any of that. March 18th.
It's the second coming of Jesus.
Jesus. Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus.
March 18th.
There it is.
Yeah. So
all right.
We talk a little bit about HBO Max quick, because obviously this is on HBO Max. HBO released some numbers, their fourth quarter numbers. And so it was interesting. I saw a lot of people misinterpreting these numbers and saying that, oh, HBO Max doubled its subscriptions in the fourth quarter. They went from 8.5 million to 17 million. No, they doubled their activations, which, not that that's a bad thing, but they, again, with HBO Max, activations and subscriptions are two different things, right? Because an HBO Max activation means that anybody that, it's people who've activated the HBO Max app. So as we know, anybody that has HBO, even through traditional channels, gets access to HBO Max. So when you get an HBO Max activation, it doesn't mean that somebody actively became a new subscriber of HBO Max. It could also be somebody that has had HBO for years that is now activating HBO Max for their on-demand content and all of that stuff. So it's, but we do know that HBO overall, between HBO and HBO Max, added 7 million new subscribers in the fourth quarter of 2020. So, you know, clearly you can do the math. I mean, that, you know, they had more new activations than they had more new total subscribers, which tells you that that activation number is a combination of new subscribers and people that were reactivating it for the first time. And of course, Wonder Woman 84 is the thing that they feel is the driving force behind all of that, which is fine. So I just, again, with HBO Max, it's hard to put it into context because Warner Media, as they should, is really looking at that overall number. Because it's all going to the same pot. It doesn't really matter where they get their $15 from, right? Whether it's from somebody who subscribes to HBO and activates HBO Max or somebody who just subscribes to HBO Max, it's all the same for them. It's just hard to compare it to, you know, and I did see the thing with the minutes, right? Like Wonder Woman 84 had the most minutes watched or whatever it was and all that stuff. But it was actually funny because based on that chart, considering Wonder Woman 84 is 2.5 hours or 2 hours and 35 minutes long, yeah, like, it actually meant less people watched it than Soul.
Right.
Right. If you actually did the math on it, which was kind of comical. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, because clearly a lot of people did watch it, which is the really the bottom line. But yeah. I think we misinterpret some of these numbers and don't really dig too deep into
the truth.
Right.
From a certain point of view.
Yes. Yeah. So, but look, I mean, we get it. You know, it's streaming is the future. Streaming is the present. It's all of it. But really what this comes down to is with Warner Media and with Warner Brothers, the decision to put all of their films for this year now on HBO Max with no additional charge, we're still going to wait to see what that ultimately does for them. You know, now,
yeah, I mean, that clearly isn't garnering enough excitement for new.
Yeah. I mean, or maybe it is. And see, so this was always the thing for me, was where I thought the flaw in not charging extra for at least some of the movies was, is that, you know, you already have tens of millions of subscribers, right? So it's not going to be easy to build Like, you're not going to double. You're not going to all of a sudden go overnight from 30 million to 80 million or 30 million to 60 million, whatever the case may be, right? So you, a lot of those people that have HBO, a lot of the people that had HBO Max already are the same people that would want to see a movie like that, right? Because clearly you're fans.
Because they're not getting it on HBO.
Yeah, you're big enough fans to pay additional $15 for entertainment content, right? So... You know, I felt like that's where you should have charged that extra, because if it doesn't, you could still have gotten the bump from, I mean, look at what WWE is doing. Here's an example. Mm-hmm. What WWE just signed with Peacock.
Peacock.
So they've essentially ended WWE Network as a standalone service. Now, if you want WWE Network, you have to have a Peacock subscription. And then WWE Network will cost an extra either $5 a month for the ad-supported version or $10 a month for the no ads, ad-free version.
A channel within Peacock.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And it's still going to offer a lot of the same stuff, the pay-per-views and all that stuff, but Peacock is going to pay them like over $2 billion over 5 years for the rights to that. It's kind of like what UFC did, right? UFC with ESPN Plus, where ESPN Plus pays them a flat rate to get the rights to their pay-per-views, and then they make – ESPN keeps the pay-per-view revenue, and UFC keeps the guaranteed money. So for every pay-per-view like the one they just had where Conor McGregor fights that does over a million buys, ESPN does well, but for most of the pay-per-views that are going to do – these days, 150,000 to 200,000 buys, they'd rather have that guarantee money and it averages out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Warner Media has decided they're just going to put their stuff up on their own service at no additional charge. And while we've seen it with Disney Plus, we have also seen that when it comes to certain films, they like Mulan, they decided to do the premium on demand. Premium, but with a movie like Soul, they didn't. And Soul is a Pixar film. Certainly, you know, they could have charged extra for it, but I still think people have to figure this out. So for me, it's tough, but Disney Plus also has a lot more subscribers.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really tough to figure out, and I guess we won't really know until this year. But look, the decision to put it on HBO Max wasn't terrible, because as we've seen, we don't know when these theaters are going to be open.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're already starting to see movies have to be pushed back and all that stuff. And HBO and Warner Media won't have to worry about that. They can market these films. They can promote their streaming service, all of that. It's just, are they leaving money on the table has always been my thing. And I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway.
Time will tell.
Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about Young Rock quick here? I know you.
Oh, yeah. So, second trailer, full trailer for NBC's new sitcom called The Young Rock, which is it's actually kind of brilliant.
It's the life
and times of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and his life as a, you know, sort of son of a superstar from wrestling and all that, and how he kind of came up in the ranks. And so it's a fun twist on some of his experiences and moments, which looks like a shit ton of fun. So,
yes, and the guy playing is Rocky Johnson looks a lot like Rocky Johnson. It's
just
scary.
Like Rocky Johnson. Yeah, it's kind of like kind of creepy.
Yeah,
and then the, like, I guess it's not the 15-year-old Rock, but the other, I don't even know what age,
younger one.
The young one looks like him, but not the. Whatever, it's not the 15-year-old, it's like the college version of him.
Oh, okay, it's
just like him.
Yeah,
they did really good casting,
and I'm sure it has everything to do with him, and he's got his fingers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just looks like a like an awesome, fun show to watch, like a Everybody Hates Chris type show.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Just with The Rock, and so
it's actually, you know, from the same people I think that did Fresh Off the Boat.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you saw that, but yeah.
So that drops February 16th, and we are watching it. We're gonna, you know, Justin and I are tuned in. We're ready to go.
Me too.
Yeah,
I gotta go watch the second trailer.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny.
It's been a long time since I've gotten invested in a broadcast sitcom. Mm.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun. I'm kind of hoping it's good because it'll be fun to have one to watch again. So
there's also a new show, Call Me Cat, with Mayim Bialik.
Mayim Bialik
from Blossom and The Big Bang Theory, and that looks pretty good too. So now with like these two shows, I feel like it's been a while since like you wanted to watch something on broadcast TV.
Yeah. And and speaking of HBO Max, sorry, I also just remembered last week I talked about Babylon 5. Babylon 5 is now on HBO Max, so everybody should watch it. Everybody go watch it. Yes.
All right.
So excited.
Cool.
All right.
All right. Let's wrap it up.
Sure. So on that note, go to thefanboygarage.com and check out our episodes and our merch and all that stuff. And, of course, join the conversation on the social medias, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook at the Fanboy Garage. And, of course, our YouTube channel where you can look at our lovely faces as we do this show every week. That's the Fanboy Garage podcast. So you should subscribe to that channel and like our episodes and all that stuff. Of course, on Twitter, you can find me at RealCLMighty.
And you guys can tweet me at @banana_TFG.
And you can find me on Twitter at @AAronSpeaks. That is @A_A_RonSpeaks. Once again, thank you so much for listening and checking us out on YouTube. If you're watching us, this is episode 130. We are closing the show. We'll catch you guys next week. Laters.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.